Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the MSP Initiative, MSP Talk. We are well into February and pretty close to March, and that means that the first quarter of the year is pretty much like almost at an end, if you think about it. Like, are you firing on all cylinders? I hope so. Let's get some homework out of the way, and we'll get into the good stuff. MSPInitiative.com. This is where everything that we do here is posted. This very session is being recorded, as well as all of the other sessions we've ever done since 2020. They're both in podcasts. So you can find them in your favorite podcatcher and video format on YouTube. Feel free to follow us, like us. Definitely, you know, keep up because we do these pretty frequently. We have two upcoming in-person events here in the States, one in Denver and one in Nashville. So actually, Nashville comes first and then comes Denver. So April 17th and 18th in Nashville. So not next month, but the month after. And then we have Denver midsummer in July, 24th and 25th. So we are pretty much almost done posting all of our MSP panelists, and we should have, you know, our expert speakers for the workshops that we're running here. But we're very excited to do this. This is our, you know, kind of second one of these. Is a super educational event for MSPs. There is no trade show floor. Yeah, that's right. You heard me. No trade show floor. This is a straight up educational event for you, the MSPs, to learn from other people who are doing what you do and experts who are not going to death you by PowerPoint. They're going to workshop you so that the idea is that you're walking out with something absolutely tangible. So here's the deal. You just got to get there. We know it doesn't, you know, might not be free to jump in your car or get on a plane, but we do not charge $1 for you to get to this event. It's not a $3.99, $9.99, $12.99 registration fee. It is free if you're an MSP. So what do you got to lose? A little bit different of a blueprint, but you will love what you come, you know, what comes out of this, because it's straight up not manufactured information. It's coming from the people in the trench just like you. And then we have what everybody loves, which are after parties and block parties and all that good stuff. So there are several listed here for the year. Most here in the U.S., some in Europe, some in, and we're actually making our way down to Australia this year as well. So check it out. We're going to be doing plenty of these. We love them. They're in various shapes, sizes, and forms. I say it all the time. I'm going to say it again. It's a labor of love because they take a lot of effort, energy. But they're really cool, and you'll have a great time. We have some MSP offers. So these are just deals and hookups from vendors in the sandbox. If they work for you, great. And lastly, our industry calendar, which is us just keep on populating a place where anytime somebody comes up with an event that we feel fits the category of IT and MSP, we're putting it in one place. This calendar does go until December of this year. There's over 250, probably closer to 300 listed events here, and I'm sure it'll grow as people, you know, keep on, you know, pushing stuff out there. But that's just to make life easier so we can all see what is happening. All of the homework is now out of the way at MSPInitiative.com. So today, our special guest on the show is Scott from Aporto. Is that the correct way to say the company?
Aporto. Yes, yeah, okay, hard tea rather than a soft tea. Yeah.
Awesome. And of course we hear the accent, Scott. So we know you're from, you know, somewhere, you know, in down under, right? Whether it's Australia or New Zealand. I'll let you tell your story a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So I'm based in Melbourne in Australia. So about an hour's flight from Sydney, where you're going to be in November. So hopefully we won't get a chance to catch up in person there. It's pretty early in the morning right at the moment, but that's a day in the life of a business like ours when you're a lot of your prospective partners and customers are in North America, so you're going to get used to an early rise and a coffee and a call. And
yeah, we do that in the opposite direction, Scott. Yeah, we got to take all those calls at nighttime here, so I understand how it goes the other way.
Yeah. So, and I'm originally a Kiwi, so the accent is a New Zealand one, but some of my New Zealand friends kind of tell me I'm starting to sound a bit more Australian as well. So, but yeah.
They say once you're there for a while, you start to get that, right? But I guess.
Well, yeah, I think wherever you go, you kind of get a little bit of the local flavor.
100%. I heard you were talking about Taylor Swift before we started the show. So yes, we're following the jet online, right? We see where it goes.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it's absorbing as much of the news cycle there as it is down here. She's certainly very popular, and she just played, I think, the biggest concert she's ever had in person in Melbourne last Friday. So I'm not quite in her demographic, although I enjoy her music, but yeah, there were certainly lots of sparkles around the city. Mm.
I actually saw a news clip where they said that the schools were moving exam schedules so that kids that were going to the concerts could still go back and test properly.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but I know just amazingly, the momentum of interest around there, and a lot of had two or three flights come over from New Zealand that were specifically booked just to get people in and out of Melbourne and Sydney for the concert. So
that's great. Well, international sales, right? Doesn't matter if it's good, they'll pay, right?
So yeah, correct. Yeah. Well, well, look, there's still hope for you and me, George.
I'm gonna that's my quote of the day. I'm gonna put that out there. If Taylor can do it, we can do it too. There you go, Jen. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey. I always like to start these off, especially if you've never been on before, to kind of like give people your background, right? And like that way they understand like how you got to present day.
Sure. So I've been in the IT industry ever since I left the university the first time around. So I've been in the industry now coming up 40 years. I need to check the anniversary. So I guess rightly or wrongly, I wear an industry veteran badge. And started life in the distribution side of the industry. I was working and was the kind of, I guess, the product owner of bringing Compaq at the time into the New Zealand market. So yeah, we were the distributor for Compaq and helped to establish the channel, organizations of which still float around today. And then after about 4 years, went across, started working for what we now call an MSP, or I always thought the word MSP is a weird word. People kind of go, what are you managing? Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think TSP maybe is starting to get a bit more traction as a better description, or MSSP, that would make more sense too, I guess, if you're into security. But anyway, that somewhat of an aside. So I've spent 21 years working for and helping to build an MSP in New Zealand, which we subsequently sold to an organization, NTT, which many of you will be familiar with, Nippon Telecommunication Company. And the that business was about, I think, 275 people when we sold it, so it was a reasonably significant organization. And then
I would say that's significant even here in the States, let alone New Zealand. So I'd say for New Zealand that was probably pretty big.
Yeah, we were certainly the largest privately owned MSP at that time, and so we enjoyed a lot of experiences over that 20-year period. It was sort of, started off in the Wild West. We were running around carrying compact portable computers that were the size of sewing cases and the sewing machines in the back of the car and rolling them out to meetings. So walking down the street with the big cell phones stuck to your ear waving them around.
I thought they were fashionable. I know Zach Morris is pretty popular over here and was Saved by the Bell. So
yeah, the few memories, a lot of fun. Now, a heck of a lot of fun in those days. There was a lot of fun still in the industry, but man, you talked about block parties at the beginning. We knew how to party.
I'm scared of the ones down there because man, I don't know what it is between Australia and New Zealand, but they, I could take my best drinkers and you guys just crush them. I don't know, I don't know if it's a gene, I don't know what it is, but like, it's like water down there.
Yeah, I'm not, certainly having a beer is a big part of the culture down here, and a lot of people maybe don't control it as well as they could, but there's a few laughs along the way. Then spent 6 years working with another service provider in New Zealand and helped grow them, that part of the business I was responsible for, from about 300 people to about 650. Came across Australia, ran a part of that business for a period of time, and then kind of decided to set up what we're doing now. And where that really spawned out of was seeing that, I think, trying to do something transformational when you're sitting inside a large incumbent was really hard. You know, it's kind of the danger of incumbency, I guess. And you have customers, but you sometimes innovation is a little bit harder to drive through. And so setting up outside and doing my own thing was giving me the freedom to actually do things faster than I might have otherwise achieved. And then, of course, then you've got to find the customer. So, that, and I know you'll be very familiar with that journey as well. So, so we're 5 years in now, and we've been working in the conversational AI space since before it became fashionable. So, we can claim to be pioneers of that. Maybe I don't know whether you'd be so bold as to say that, but we've certainly been working in that space for a fair while now, looking at how we apply conversational artificial intelligence to understanding conversations that come in typically through the email channel in particular into MSPs and contact centers, and helping to understand the nature of the communication and then determine what the actions are, and then helping to trigger, automations and pass those requests across to the right outcome faster than an agent can, in the process deliver a better service and save a fair bit of money.
Okay, well, let's back up. So you're 5 or 6 years in. You're right. I mean, I at least in the last 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, I've been, it's like, every 4 or 5 years, some new marketing trend comes in. And, like I always heard about it as like machine learning, right? But now it's turned to, oh, AI. All right, cool. Like we're just gonna use the movie term. All good. And I mean, obviously companies are popping up all day long. ChatGPT probably like supercharged the conversation just because, like they were the ones that made it super popular. But there's still a lot of question marks on the viability of it and like what does it actually help do today? Like we hear about what's coming and what tomorrow might look like. Like in technology land, like 3 years, 5 years, like that's an eternity, right? In technology land. But like let's talk 6 months, 12 months today. Like, what does it actually do other than maybe not have the best conversation with the human being? That's the question. And listen, the concept, especially in MSP land of scripting and APIs and trying to get multiple disparate systems to kind of communicate together, has been around for a long time. And I would say the larger, more mature MSPs probably even have a dedicated centralization person, right? That like takes all of these products and tools and SaaS applications, which are now dozens, right? 30, 40, 50, 60, whatever, including Microsoft, including the PSA, including email and all this, whatever, and like trying to like fine-tune whatever that's supposed to be, right? Because like, we all know people can swipe their credit card, but that doesn't mean that it actually, does anything for them. So, that being said, fast forward to modern day, right? Like the whole AI thing was like, all right, well, I'm going to use ChatGPT and like integrate it in with my system and it's going to build scripts for me. And I'm like, the last thing I would want is like a level one person having some script built for them. Nobody's looked at it. They press go, they blew up all of the, your customers at once. Like, that's a possibility and it's not far-fetched, right? Like that could absolutely happen. And I would argue probably has happened, if I had to go look deep enough for it. And then the other things that we hear is like, oh, well, you can put a bot on your website and try and like front end your tools. And like, maybe that'll pump up some knowledge base articles or how to's. And then maybe that'll cut down on, you know, people having to go through the normal channels that we all know and love. And like, when we talk about that category, let's call it category number two, it's like, you know, garbage in, garbage out. You know, like if you don't have the right information to feed the machine's just got to be nonsense, useless, and just create more time to life to have somebody get to where they need to go. So that's what I see there. And then like the third part, let's call it bucket three, was like, oh, well, we're going to hook this into your tool so that we can make your backend people more efficient because it can search things faster for you rather than a human being having to go and look for it. Okay. But then, oh, we're going to like have it pre-canned responses and be able to respond to your tickets because maybe your texts don't respond back the way they should or as completely or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. That feels a little bit cheeky and, you know, it doesn't seem like that adds a lot of value based on what we're talking about. And so like those three categories so far are what's being talked about regularly when it comes to this conversation in MSP land. So like to me, you know, as a guy who's purchased many a product, many a tool, many a SaaS application in my day and still do, I'm not sure there's enough value yet for me to spend my time. Like, maybe other people can tweak it and figure it out and get it a little bit further down the line. And then I'll circle back, you know, maybe this time next year and see where everything stands. But like, I just don't understand what all the rage is about so far.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think it's a pretty good summary of I think the challenge facing a lot of MSPs around, you know, the hype, if you like, and, you know, you'd be familiar with the, you know, the Gartner hype cycle and, you know, the hype of, you know, the hype versus the despair of reality, you know, and I think that the technology is probably kind of down, you know, it's well past the hype. I mean, it probably feels as though it's still super hype, but, you know, there's a lot more kind of pragmatism, I think, starting to emerge around, well, okay, yeah, look, yes, it can do everything. It can cure cancer, it can, you know, give people back sight, it can certainly solve every problem that an MSP ever thought they could possibly come up with, and you know, in the process bake bread as well. So you're gonna go, wow, this is amazing, and then you have to kind of sift through all that garbage to find
it kind of like, remember the opening scene to the very first Back to the Future in the garage? And like, you know, like it was like, oh, like the can opener opens for the dog and like, you know, like it's overflowing. And then like the coffee machine gets started. And like, it was like literally like almost like one of those maze contraption where like a ball kicks into a thing. And then like, it kind of feels like the modern day version of that. Right. Except I could actually see that working. I don't know.
Yeah. And look, I think, yeah, to me, if I break it down a little bit into what I see, the both the opportunity and the threat for MSPs is around the adoption of AI, that there's really two lenses I look at it as. One as, well, yeah, how does an MSP actually contemplate incorporating AI as part of their service delivery model? And you touched on the different ways in which they can do that, you know, automation at the back end, kind of providing integration at the front through bots, etc. Sorry. And that, you know, so broadly speaking, how do we use it to sort of power our own business? And then the second bucket is, well, how do we help our customers to adopt it? Because like cybersecurity, for example, customers are looking for leadership, and leadership needs to come from this community, the MSP community. And, you know, I think that the MSPs in general are, you know, seen as a trusted source of somewhat vendor agnostic kind of, you know, help, let's help you navigate your way through this, Mr. or Mrs. Customer. And I think that both of those are quite different in terms of what they need to be focused on to actually achieve the outcomes that they need. You know, in terms of the internal consumption and use, and how do we build it into our stack of, 50 different technologies, and where do we plug it in, and which one do we pull out, and which ones overlap, and, how do we connect them all together, all of that sort of stuff. I think the key that I've seen with MSPs that are more successful in tackling that is ownership and accountability. That having someone within the organization or a team, depending on the size of the organization, who is on the hook for driving your automation. And I think, I think move away from talking about AI. AI is an enabler, absolutely, but driving automation in the business, and the automation of service delivery, customer experience, whatever it might be, and whatever your particular focus area is, your growth strategy, it's all about automation. And when you think about the challenges that MSPs face of customers that want more, they want to pay less, they want more security, better accuracy, they want to be able to blame someone when it goes wrong. They want to sue someone when they're compromised. All those things kind of like, you look at the MSP world and lots of opportunity, but a lot of challenge there too. And I think that automation, also that ownership of that responsibility has to sit with someone. It has to be someone senior that's got to enable to actually make decisions on the behalf of the business. If you spread it to the winds, or you just talk to your leadership team overall and say, oh, hey guys, we need to do this more, what should we do first? You're just not going to get there. You're going to waste your time, and you're going to waste a lot of money in the process, because you're going to chase these big kind of ambitious automated can opener examples, and they never quite work, as opposed to actually looking at the small little things that actually we can do today, we can turn on, we can take the benefit, we can bank the saving, we can bank the improvement in quality, we can bank the better customer experience. And then let's not get overhyped about it. Let's not try and make it do something that it's not capable of doing right now. Let's just do something really simple with it. So that's kind of my lens on that first.
So can I summarize what you just said right there as today, this is a enhancer, right? Like it's a, hey, I'm going to plug this in and use it in such a way that it's going to save me some time or add additional flexibility functionality into what I'm already doing. But the hype cycle will say, oh, this is going to reduce the number of people that you need to actually do the work that you do. It's like, is that a future promise or is that a today promise?
Oh, look, we're seeing it today. I mean, in our own domain and what we do for customers, that we're taking 5 to 10% of the headcount requirement out of that level one kind of triage service desk engagement. So we've got the stats that support that. Mm. Now, when you talk about 5 to 10%, of course, for many MSPs, well, that's half a person. So you're not like fundamentally stripping out 20% of your workforce. You are freeing up time for your team to do other things. So, and again, this gets back to the ownership and accountability question. Who's driving the agenda, not only to implement the tools, but to actually repurpose the capacity? Because I don't know of one MSP that's sitting there with people on their hands. Yeah,
I mean, if they do, then they either have too many people or not enough business.
Exactly correct. So you're then saying, okay, well, as we introduce some of these technologies, how do we make sure that we manage our change process with our teams to ensure that we're pointing them at the right new opportunities, rather than just seeing that efficiency gain disappear into the ether like every other promised efficiency gain over the years. So, I think the key focus is, well, how do we kind of through that change exercise get our teams focused on the higher impact service experience things, where human agents do make the difference. When customers don't want to be talking to a bot, they don't want to be in a feeling as though they're in a, you know, in a flow chart and they're buried halfway down and they're in the wrong branch and now they've got to work their way back up to the top again and find the next step. You know, that's where the human navigator is a far better solution and far more realistic given where the technology is, you know, to apply your human capability to. So really kind of those two things have to go hand in hand. Yeah, use the technology, but how do we want this to impact our people, and what is the process we're going to put in place to ensure that that happens?
I would say most MSPs have a dreamer or a visionary or a I wish we could guy or girl, but I would say a lot of those same companies do not have the implementer of that story, right? So like to your point, there's a lot of cool tools out there, but if they don't have the knowledge set or the resources internally to actually implement and put it into practice, then it's just an idea. It doesn't actually get to the end game.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, people, everyone, as you say, everyone's got an innovative idea about, you know, what we'll do one day when we've got time, you know, and that's the challenge. And you've got to be really brutal about how you separate out the capacity to execute. And I think the thing that defines the successful organizations is, you know, if you want to find and see where progress is, look for where the most talented people in your organization are, because it's the talented people that actually make things happen. And we can't take George out of that. He's doing such a great job there that, you know, how could we possibly sacrifice, you know, that skill? Because he's so good at doing A, B, and C. So yeah, but he's also going to be the guy that drives this initiative over here. And we've got to make some big decisions around where we, you know, where in this we want George to play. Do we want him to be solving the today problem or building the tomorrow business? And you know, that's a hard decision for those organizations, but it's a one that you have to make, because you're not going to get there, you know, in the hours from 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. when the phones start getting a bit quieter. You know, that's got to be a whole motion of activity that's full-time.
Fair. Okay. So when you like got to get into the DeLorean now, got to keep on using my Back to the Future reference, go back 5-ish years. What was the challenge that you were trying to solve for that ultimately started this company?
Yeah, look, there were two passions that were driving what we did. The first of those was the idea that, you know, we saw the emergence of natural language understanding, you know, machine learning as a mechanism to, you know, automate unstructured interactions between customers and their service provider.
Okay.
And you know, through the application of that technology around those conversations. Now, when I talk about conversations, we've never really tackled the voice question. Yeah, you know, we do a bit of, you know, obviously your organization does, you know, we saw and still see that in MSP land, you know, if you've got 40% of your traffic coming into your business via phone, that there's another 40% coming in via email, and then you've got other, you know, you've got portals, you've got bots, you've got web forms, you've got live chats, and everyone says, oh yeah, it's going to go down the bots or it's going to go down live chat, and we're pushing people to portals and everyone's going to be in portal land. And I still see this massive disillusionment amongst people that try and execute that strategy, that come to the realization that actually the only thing you didn't get right out of that was you forgot what the customer wanted. What the customer wants is they want to actually talk to someone that can solve their problem as early in the cycle as possible without killing you and your productivity. Yeah, and we both know that, you know, the voice channel and email are the highest cost to serve channels.
Yeah.
because they're largely unstructured and they require presence.
We've heard the analogy of it's like triaging in the emergency room, or you calling an emergency line, or whatever, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we can all talk about the categorization of the types of requests that come into an IT services company or managed services company, but people are, and I'm going to use a cliche now, but microwave society, right? Like, hey, I need it, I want it now. Solve my problem now, stop what you're doing and take care of my issue now. And like, of course, that issue could be as simple as you didn't plug it in. I mean, silliness, or it could be a legitimate problem. Like today in the States, the three major largest cell phone carriers all went down at the same time. Now we don't know what, like, is that a cyber attack? We don't know. But imagine, major cities, all three carriers, no cell coverage. That's a problem, right? Like, you're going to want to have some real time response to that, not, hey, we'll get back to you when we have time. Now, that's a little bit bigger than probably what IT and managed services companies are doing. But to the individual companies, organizations, whatever they are, the people that they're supporting, everybody's their own most important customer, right? So like, if you can't do what you need to do in the moment, it's a problem. All that being said, to your point, like, go where your customer is, right? Like, if that's chat, if that's SMS, if that's phone, if that's email, if that's, I don't know, post, snail mail, whatever it is. Like, here's the thing. Everybody has their own. Well, I think the best way to say this is the level of urgency depends on how important they feel the problem is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, and my best example of that is, and I keep knocking on them because I think it was a mistake, but one of the low budget airlines here in the US, Frontier Airlines, last year deleted their phone number. You can no longer call them. You have to use the bot or use the app or whatever. But like, you if your plane got canceled or you need to, you feel like you can't resolve your issue electronically, there is no one to talk to. Now, I don't know about you, for that reason alone, not an option for me, right? Like, sorry, no, I don't think that that's right. So like, that's my example of, I think they went too far another direction.
Yeah, and look, we see, and there are certainly examples of organizations, and I won't name them, but their whole solution or platform strategy is about turning voice and email off, and the taking people to the promised land, and you go, man, good luck to you. And if you've got enough momentum, there'll be a portion of people, particularly those that are internal facing, if you can mandate to your community that you can't interact with us any other way than this, then yeah, that's a viable alternative. But if you're in a competitive market space where your customers have choice, and you're telling them that the best way to improve the service experience for them is to not let them get access to you the way they want, then you're destined to fail. I think this was kind of the not the awakening, but certainly kind of why we went down this email path early in our journey, because we were playing around with bots 5-6 years ago, and wow, this is pretty amazing, and look at what it can do, and yeah, it gets that wrong, but gee, got it nearly right, and customers kind of go, we had a couple of customers say, well, actually, this is really interesting, but it feels like it's not really yet. But we've got a real problem over here with how we manage our customers' email interactions with us, with the technology, can we twist the technology that way? And you go, well, hell yeah, how hard can that be? And the reality is, it's really hard. Really hard, because the email channel has all sorts of complexities around repeat calls and people communicating from the side, and they've got lots of garbage and all their company logos and their disclaimers, and someone reading an email trying to work out what the hell actually is happening here has got to go through, you know, a chain of five different conversations, all those sorts of things which you've got to solve as part of kind of applying artificial intelligence to kind of unpacking those conversations. So, you know, as we kind of went into it, each time we got to another, yeah, it was like peeling the layers of an onion. Oh, God, okay, oh, wow. Yeah, okay, how are we going to solve this one, you know? Now, the nice thing about that is that you know, every time you peel a layer back, there's another part of the moat, you know, you're creating competitive, competitive differentiation, making it harder for others to follow. So we've kind of got to this point now where we feel we've actually, whilst everyone's saying, oh yeah, but isn't email going away? Isn't email dying? And so, well, yeah, so Santa Claus, you know. So
Microsoft would tell you differently, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, correct. So, you know, as long as you know, your and my bums are pointing to the ground, email's not going away, you know. And sure, there's a shift in channels, but you know, it's actually the consumption of email is continuing to grow. Now, what's happening is more of that is becoming system generated, because email is a great generic integration layer for automations between trading partners, you know. So as a result, you've got this, you know, universal SMTP kind of transport layer, and people are using it and abusing it for all sorts of purposes that probably were never thought of at the start. Now, again, the application of AI across that layer that says, okay, well, if it is system to system kind of interactions, there's a massive application of AI in that space, because, you know, when it's a repetitive conversation, that's actually has its own challenges to solve. So yeah, I mean, that kind of transformational recognition that hey, this channel's not going away. You know, yes, we want to have partnerships and be able to say to customers, well, yes, we really focus on email, but we know you've got voice, we know you've got chat, we know you've got, you know, SMS. And this is how we fit within that ecosystem and partner with organizations to kind of say, hey, we love email. We think it's, you know, we think it's great. And you know, you might call it a sunset industry, and you know, good luck. You've got a lot more years under your available to you to see the sunset than I have, you know. So yeah, that I think is kind of really what drove us into that email space, recognizing that if we could help organizations that can't dictate to their customers how they interact, if we can help them deal with that problem more efficiently, either through automation or visibility of trends or visibility of dissatisfaction, or, you know, what the top issues are, and helping connect those issues to an outcome faster, that's what we get passionate about.
Okay. So, I mean, a lot of that, or I'd say most of that data is coming into, you know, the PSA, CRM, ticketing system, right? You know, ERP, if you know, like some sort of centralized operating system, right? Where that data is supposed to be collected, collated, and you know, logged or archived, whatever you want to call it. Now, like, I could go to any MSP event and there's, you know, there used to be, now it's a lot of security events, but there used to be 1,000, you know, or 100 or 50 different companies that are like, oh, we fixed this part of your system that doesn't exist. Or, hey, you know, it's not great. Let's just bolt this on and now you can do this. And that, by the way, that still exists. Totally does. And then, like, you get this, hey, these tools are now overlapping. And, like, do we actually get to where we were trying to go? Or are we just in the middle of a mess? Mm-hmm. So, like, if you were to, you know, create a, hey, you're going to come to your company to solve X. Is the answer, am I displacing something? Am I adding something that doesn't exist right now? Am I complementing something? Like, what is that picture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of our customers have a solution to, well, so they don't have a solution. They have a way of dealing with the problem that we solve. Okay. And the way they solve it currently is poor. And the way they solve it is either by taking advantage of email parsing technologies that are integrated into the PSA, and a lot of the PSAs kind of have a means of dealing with email, and or they there's other third party parser type products that have been around for quite a long time that kind of say, okay, here's a pattern, when you see that pattern, do this. And so when we going into customers, it's typically because the parser of the PSA that they're using is either immature, or it's only handles very narrow set of use cases, doesn't incorporate true application of AI. And or they kind of say, okay, well, yeah, it's got to go. Some of it's got to go into system A, some of these conversations, but other of these conversations need to go into system B. So I pick a name. I use ServiceNow for my IT service management, and I use Salesforce for my customer sales opportunity management, and I have email. And when an email comes in, how do I get it into the right system? And so, where we come in is because we specialize around that type of use case, we're able to kind of say, we can do that by this way. And it becomes kind of an abstraction layer that complements the ability to get the email kind of going where it should. So that's kind of the advantage of saying, okay, well, all your conversations don't need to go into system A before they can go to system B. We can just say, okay, well, hey, you got an email, that one goes to A, that one goes to B. So that's the value proposition around the comparison with the ticketing system parsers. And again, there's a maturity thing. I won't go into the details of all the functionality that's different, but fundamentally that's kind of it. And then you've got the more traditional parser platforms that they might be using, which again have come out of regex. For anyone on the people, some of the geeks will their ears will, oh, regex, great, I know that. There's ways of extracting and looking for patterns that aren't really about AI at all. They're just looking for patterns, and then once you see that pattern, taking something out and pushing it somewhere. So that's which is what the traditional parser solutions do. So and that's why our prospects come to us, say, well, hey, this has been great, does these things really well, but it's not really dealing with the unstructured conversations that come in via email. It's okay for system generated, but not for human generated. So those are the two. So it is really you've outgrown the functionality, or the problem that you have in that channel has evolved to the point where the out of the box solution, with the PSA, is actually not giving you what you need.
Okay, so a more advanced way of handling how email comes into the PSA, and then I assume that with your additional bells and whistles, you're able to take some of the categorization or decision making of what happens when that message gets in, so that you take less human being time to get the right things in the system properly.
And absolutely right, because most of the both PSAs and a lot of the voice platforms that are around are about, okay, how can we get this conversation to the right person faster? But the next step is always dependent on it being a human that actually makes a decision about what happens next.
Yeah.
And whereas we see that there's actually a large portion of conversations that come in that don't need human involvement at all. So we can present, and we're really this is about handing off pre-categorized conversations into a PSA or a workflow product or an RPA tool, whatever your preferences for driving automation in your business, that's presenting that conversation in a well-structured, pre-categorized format that allows the logical next step to be triggered automatically. And if that is getting it to a human agent, that's great. But we're also saying, hey, there's a lot of noise in here that you don't need to see at all. And that's where we get to this idea of, you know, freeing up 5 to 10% of your agent's time, and you know, by removing the ticket volume that they actually don't need to be dealing with at all, or making the ticket volume that they do need to deal with easier to understand and cleaner and pre-qualified, so that you're not asking your human agents to go through a complex tree structure that the CTO or whoever the innovator was came up with. It says, well, when you know, we categorize our conversations with customers, and you know, so that we can do analysis of where, you know, where we need to invest, and and those things have evolved over the last 5, 10, 15 years, however long the business has been operating. They've morphed, they're an ugly tree. New agents come in and go, I don't even know where to start with this. So I'll pick one from the top three. And you know, we've got plenty of examples where you know, we talk to organizations, and say, oh, how's your categorization? So yeah, it's great. Yeah, so like people always get the top three, and you know, because we put them at the top of the page. Okay, well, what happens when you change the top three, the order of the top three, and you put something else? Oh, you've now discovered that people take the line of least resistance. They pick one of the top three, not because it's the right thing, but because it's easy for them to pick. And that's from their point of view, they don't care. You know, I mean, of course they do care, but they're kind of, you know, that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to actually solve the customer's problem. I'm not here to make my boss's life easier.
So the categorization part, specifically, we're talking about what type of issue it is, from which customer, from which contact, getting it to the right, you know, queue or board, and then ultimately creating the correct tagging on the you know, the communication, like, hey, this is about a password reset. This is about a computer that's not turning on. This is about a security issue. This is about, and then that intelligent categorization and placement in the system in the right places can then trigger workflows in the correct way, so that you, by the time a human being has to touch it, a lot of decisions were already made before them.
And they can focus on just doing what needs to be done.
Okay, that makes sense. So like, what is the ideal size IT services company or managed services company that would, is it, you know, hey, a small one-man shop could benefit from this? Or does it need to be, hey, once you get to a critical mass and you have, you know, this size, that's where this really helps? Or what does that look like?
Yeah, look, our smallest customers typically will have, you know, maybe 10 people in the organization. So you've got to a point where you've got one or two people who are carrying the load of the incoming new request management and direction, you know, and that's a big enough problem to dedicate a person to. That's when, you know, now in terms of what volume does that look like? Maybe it's a, you know, a couple of thousand emails, you know, 1,000 to a couple of thousand emails a month are coming in. That's when the problem is big enough to solve. Smaller companies, they have the same problem, but it's not.
So would you categorize all
the other problems they're dealing with? Yeah.
Would you call that dispatching?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And that, and you know, the bigger end, you know, there is no upper, you know, upper limit. We're just turning on a customer at the moment where we've got a backlog of 1 million records that they're asking us to
wow,
you know, use AI to summarize and extract kind of trends, categorize them, identify the relationship between these trends and dissatisfaction or callbacks. And you know, that's a contact center use case. It's not the MSP use case, but you know, the every MSP kind of has their own little mini contact center call services. And so now typically in contact center land, the mindset is a little bit more actually tuned towards customer experience management, whereas for MSPs, the mindset around that service desk is, how can we get efficiency? You know, how can we reduce the amount of time that we're spending touching each of these requests?
I feel like, and probably this is worth a whole nother call, but I feel like the MSP thinks that by optimizing service delivery, that the customer experience is just going to get, that's how they make customer experience better. Mm-hmm. It's different when you're going to, again, your use case is a contact center, right? Obviously outside of technology land potentially. When they talk about customer experience, man, I feel like the metrics that they're looking at are diametrically opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely right. I mean, I think it is all about customer experience because that is 100% of their business. Contact centers, yeah, service desk is maybe 10-15% of an MSP. It's 100% of a contact center. Yeah. So yeah, so their focus has to be more granular. And you know, I talked a lot in the early days with the MSP that I talked about with that we grew, and we used to have what we call the chocolate box index. And we gave our engineers a supply of three or four nice chocolates in a box that every time they went out on site to a customer, the message was leave a little handful of chocolates and a personal note.
I like that.
Saying, hey, I fixed your problem. And
I like that a lot.
And it's like sending your car to the mechanics to be repaired, and the only thing that really you care about when it comes back is that they gave it a valet. And you go, oh wow, $1,000, but at least I got the car valeted. What people's perception of value and perception of great services is often completely disconnected from actually solving the problem.
I agree. That is a great. I don't think I've ever had it put in that way. That's a great point. And like moving forward, one thing that came to my head, like as we were going through this whole conversation to this point, was I can imagine that the hey, I got to cut expenses and keep my costs low guy, you know, who's trying to compete on that price point, is going to try and go way deep into the pool on all of this, right? Like, hey, I'm going to try and just throw the machine at it and put as little human being time at it and just undercut everybody's price. But I'll tell you what, I believe that there's a customer who will say, I will pay extra. I will pay a premium so that when I need help, I want a human being to answer my issue.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, that gets back to that. You know, how do you take the time that you're creating to repurpose it into value for your business? And to me, that, you know, the chocolate box index, it was all about, you know, field services pre-internet, where people actually had to go out and talk to customers. So the parallel is not necessarily immediately applicable today, but you know, the principle is exactly the same, you know, that says, because I haven't got time to do that. Well, you make time, and the way we're going to make time is we're going to automate this part of what you're doing so that it gives you time to spend the 2 minutes writing the personal note and leaving the chocolate, the box of chocolates. Box of chocolates cost us a couple of bucks.
Yeah, but it feels good.
But yeah, man, you know, the number of customers that say, oh, we love you, our team love doing this, they wouldn't let us go and change the contract to anyone else because, you know, you treat them so well.
I agree. No, I like that. That's a great way to actually wrap this. Where do people find out more about the company, how you solve problems for MSPs and all things therein?
Yeah, look, we've got a new website that we're just about to roll out, and my co-founder will be gnashing, she's driving getting that out the door. This will give her a bit more anxiety about we need to get it out. But aportio.com, aportio.com, that's us. Our story, both in terms of what we can do for MSPs and also for contact centers, our website is intended to help tell both of those stories. And, you know, there's a whole heap of videos we're pushing out there to kind of explain some of the functionality that we do. And, you know, clearly there's a contact ability through there. We like to use email, and, feel free to contact us at sales@aportio.com.
Awesome. I love this story. I think we touch on a lot of points, but man, that punchline at the end, man, it really sit well with me. I hope people take that. If anybody, walks away from this and doesn't learn something, I guess we're putting out bad content, but I walk away from this saying, you know what? As much as the cool flashing light stuff will help, how premium of a service are you ultimately willing to provide? That's the question. Because like the experience you're going to get at the BMW dealership or place is going to be completely different than the Kia.
And that's the challenge for MSPs is, you can't keep driving to see who gets to the bottom fastest, who can give away the efficiency gains that we're getting through the application of technology. How quickly can we give those away to the customer? Think about how you can keep a bit of that for yourself.
I agree.
But you do that through adding value in other ways.
I agree. Scott, this is great. Guys, this session was absolutely recorded. We're going to get it up on, the YouTube channel and MSPinitiative.com under sessions and the podcatchers. And this is a good one. And check these guys out. I mean, listen, there's so many tools out there, but I guess the point I take away from this is if you can take away decision-making time from your staff, which means that, number one, you'll get a little bit more consistency on the front end. And two, you can repurpose their time to bump up that experience that we just talked about, possibly. That's a win. I think that that's a worthwhile, investigation of something, in my opinion, but I digress. I promise Scott's not sending me a check to say that. That's just me talking out loud. So thank you for tuning in. We're going to keep doing these a couple times a week, usually Tuesdays and Thursdays, 1 o'clock Eastern New York time. Otherwise, 24/7 online at MSPinitiative.com. Scott, I'm going to touch base with you after this. Our last conversation has actually progressed on our side, so I'll send you some information on that, but we'll take that offline. For everybody else, talk soon and keep watching and keep listening. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.